Immediately, the butchers came in, started systematically butchering these bison. Joe Ben Wheat carried out such a thorough analysis of the butchery that he was able to establish how it was done on a systematic basis and to calculate that enough meat came from this, both fresh and dried, for several bands to live for at least 2 months. The important part of this economy was not only the fresh meat, it was the dried meat, where they pounded meat and fat to make pemmican carried around in leather bags, a critical part of the plains economy. Hunts like this went on for thousands of years. At sites like Head Smashed Inn in Canada, they have found thousands of years of occasional drives over strategic cliffs or into gullies. This form of hunting bison on foot survived into the 18th century, and we actually have eyewitness accounts from fur traders of this taking place. And then came the bow and arrow, much later in prehistory, and then finally the horse, which helped develop the flamboyant plains bison hunting cultures of historic times. Moving now to the eastern woodlands, and the woodlands were established there early after the late Ice Age. There was a thin scatter of Paleo-Indian bands living in this vast region around 10,500 years ago and earlier. There were Clovis people in this region. They were the descendants of the original immigrants. These people probably hunted and foraged over thousands of square miles of tundra, coniferous forest, and deciduous woodland, but based themselves as much as possible near permanent water sources, that age-old strategy of anchoring yourself to reliable water and places where there were more abundant foods. Of nowhere in the world is this more true than eastern North America, and the plains indeed, where the chronicle of prehistory is written through the changing styles of stone tools. In this case, stone projectile points, ones with the fluted thinning flake at the base, and also later forms, which have been catalogued and studied in great detail. The earlier ones bear many resemblances to the well-known Clovis and then the later Folsom Point of the plains, Folsom being another site in New Mexico. So we've got this chronology of gradually increasing populations living not by hunting megafauna, but by hunting much more diverse food sources. You see, what you've got on here is a classic strategy. It's a strategy that's going to become important when we start talking about hunters. Probably their staples were deer and a relatively narrow range of plant foods, depending on the different localities. Game was some more important than other areas. Fishing may have been important in another. Nut harvests of fall may have been important somewhere else. The point is that they had a sort of core of staples, and then they knew of all other foods, all kinds of other foods, which they would turn to in starvation years, in years when, say, nut harvests were poor, so that they had, as it were, a savings account of other foods they could use. And we'll find when we get onto farmers later in the course that this cushion changed radically in later times. For the most part, these people were sparse on the ground. They lived in large hunting territories because populations were still low. Many of them may have confined themselves to one watershed or river valley. But their main food sources were small and medium-sized game, like deer and rabbits, and plant foods. But the densest populations were by the shores of lakes and estuaries, in river valleys, where there were unusually diverse food sources. One of the striking features about later Paleo-Indian and what's called archaic culture, which followed hunter-gatherer societies, was how diverse their food bases were. They weren't just hunting game. They were living on different foods at different times. There were well-established seasonal rounds, which ebbed and flowed with the harvests of nuts and so on. They knew their territories intimately. every detail of them. But especially rich food locations served as important base camps for these mobile bands, with broadly prescribed territories. One such example of this is a site called Thunderbird in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley, which is a classic example of a camp where many different activities took place. Hunting, plant gathering, manufacture of artifacts, people lived there. And this location, which was a form of seasonal base camp, was used for more than 3,000 years.